I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. About a year ago, the Chinese city of Urumqi erupted in riots. At least 200 people died. Urumqi is the capital of the region of Xinjiang. It's home to Uyghurs, who are Turkic Muslims, and it's home to a growing number of Han Chinese migrants. Most of the rioters were Uyghur, and most of those killed were Han Chinese. But each side tells a different tale of who started the violence and of what lay behind it. The World's Mary Kay Magstad visited Xinjiang and has a tale of two narratives.
The military museum in the city of Shirhudza is a monument to what it calls the heroic Han Chinese who came out to settle the Wild West. Films like this one tell of the hardships the first settlers endured, struggling to turn desert into farmland. Lu Jianou came here as a 20-year-old demobilized soldier. He's now 81. He says when he arrived here, sent by his military unit to settle the land, there was nowhere to live and not much to eat. I ask him whether, in 60 years of living here, he's learned any Uyghur. No, he says, I just speak Mandarin in my own dialect. Later, he adds, but the Uyghurs here are smart. They can speak our language. But even when they do speak Mandarin, many employers don't want to hire Uyghurs. The head of a state-run cotton farm near Shirhudza, Liu Junfeng, says less than 1% of his 8,000 farm workers are Uyghur. He claims that's because there aren't many Uyghurs around here. And, he says, there never were. The Uyghur side of the story is different. Rabia Kadir is the exiled Uyghur spokeswoman that the Chinese government loves to hate. She says the Bingtuan, the military-linked group that founded Shirhudza, confiscated farms and resources from Uyghurs, including her own family's farm, when she was 13.
When we were banished to the southern part of our homeland, we saw Uyghur farmers whose land and water were also taken away by the Bingtuan. And they told us that if they complained, they'd be arrested or even executed.
And while the Chinese government paints a picture of ethnic harmony and tolerance, Kadir says the real history is very different.
In 1954,
the Chinese authorities said, if we get rid of the rich, then the Uyghur people will have peace and harmony. Then they arrested and killed a number of Uyghurs. And in 1957, they said if they get rid of the Uyghur intellectuals, then the Uyghur people will enjoy true peace and harmony. And they killed a lot of Uyghurs.
Rabia Kadir, now 63, petite, with long gray braids, used to be a successful Uyghur businesswoman. But then she publicly criticized government policies toward Uyghurs and spent 6 years in prison. She now lives in Washington and heads the Uyghur American Association. The Chinese government has accused her, without showing hard evidence, of having masterminded last July's riots. Xinjiang's governor, Nur Bekri, has been especially outspoken in his accusations.
What happened on July 5, 2009 was a criminal act collaborated by separatist forces inside and outside Xinjiang in a very pre-organized scheme.
After the riots, the government shut down most internet access in the area for almost a year. Almost 200 Uyghurs were sentenced for their part in the riots, 35 to death. Hundreds more have been detained. These include Uyghur intellectuals and journalists. One received a 15-year prison sentence for talking to a foreign journalist. The man had been working for a website run by Uyghur academic Ilham Toti, who teaches at the Ethnic Minorities University in Beijing.
We should access our people, and provide information to our people.
Toti says it's vital for Uyghurs to be able to get information out and to share ideas. But he says it comes at a cost. After last year's riots, he was detained for 3 weeks, while Xinjiang's governor accused him of conspiring with Rabia Kadir to plan the riots. Toti was released for lack of evidence. But he says police still watch him and let him know when he does something that makes them unhappy. Writing articles about the continuing crackdown on Uyghurs makes them unhappy, he says, as they made clear a few months back in a particularly chilling way. Toti says his 16-year-old daughter disappeared. He asked the police to help find her. After 2 weeks, one of them called and said, "Oh, don't worry. One of our friends took her out of the city to have some fun. But say, you might want to think about those articles you write." His eyes fill with tears as he tells the story. That's one way the Chinese government tries to muffle the other side of the story, the side about Uyghurs being frustrated by decades of being marginalized, persecuted, and left behind in an economy dominated by Han Chinese. This frustration has periodically boiled up into riots and attacks on Chinese government targets. The government now says it will try to do better for Uyghurs, Xinjiang Governor Nur Bekri.
"We will do our utmost to promote the development of the three prefectures in southern Xinjiang to improve the investment climate and the working and living conditions of the local people there."
China's central government plans to pour billions of dollars into the region to do all this. But if this is a program to win Uyghur hearts and minds, there's one part that's not likely to work. The government is tearing down the ancient Uyghur city in Kashgar, which dates back to the Silk Road. The government wants to rebuild it as a kind of Western version of Shenzhen, the fishing village-turned megacity just across from Hong Kong, made up almost entirely of Han Chinese migrants. So it seems the government response to Uyghur concerns is to throw money and more Han Chinese migrants at the problem and complete the taming of China's Wild West. For The World, I'm Mary Kay Magstead, Urumqi.
You can read Mary Kay's blog posts from Xinjiang there at theworld.org.